You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome to the program. It's hour one on this Tuesday. Dan and the Danettes, Dan Patrick Show. We'll check in with the Chargers. Justin Herbert will join us coming up next hour. Buda Baker, the Arizona Cardinals safety, a little bit later on as well. Your phone calls always welcome. 877-3DP-SHOW. Email address, dp@danpatrick.com. Twitter handle at DP Show. Say good morning to those watching on Peacock. It's free. Download the app. Watch all 3 hours. And, of course, our radio affiliates numbering over 360 cities around the country. Rams handled the Bears last night 24-10. And I already saw a headline calling for Matt Nagy's head in Chicago. That seems like a little bit of an overreaction, but we'll dive into that game coming up. Tonight, Rays Dodgers game 6. It's Blake Snell versus the Dodgers bullpen. Now, Tony Gonsolin is going to be the opener. We saw this last week in Game 2, where he served as an opener for a band of 6 relievers, 3 lefties, 3 righties. I don't know what's going to happen tonight. You got Walker Buehler waiting in Game 7, if there is a Game 7. I guess all hands on deck when you get to a Game 7. But this is the modern philosophy here, where although Blake Snell was great his last start, and you want him to go as long as you can. We've seen this philosophy with both these pitching staffs. Hey, let's just go to the bullpen. It used to be you didn't want to get to the bullpen. If you were a manager, you wanted to have your starter out there as long as possible. That hasn't been the case. But the concern I have with the Dodgers is the Rays could help their cause if they get to the Dodgers bullpen as early as possible. Because if you break down the pitching in the World Series with LA, the starters, the ERA is 2.66, and the Rays are batting 185. The Dodgers bullpen, the ERA is 5.57, and the Rays are batting 272. That's your modern approach to baseball. Turn it over to your bullpen. But what happens when your bullpen isn't very good? We'll find out tonight when these two battle in Game 6. Back to the Bears, that game last night. It was 24-10. It felt like the Rams had this game, that it wasn't that close. And the Rams have been a good story this year. What I loved is this was a chance to reintroduce Aaron Donald to the rest of the country. Jared Goff also maybe a coming out party again. And, you know, they run the football, got a pretty good defense here, but it helps when you're facing a Bears offense that didn't score an offensive touchdown last night. And I brought this up the other day. About we're seeing these teams that are flawed because they don't play defense. And I had an NFL scout who heard me yesterday talking about the Seahawks, and they need some defensive help as well. He said, this is all about offense. Nobody plays defense. All you want to do is play offense. This is all about offense now. And, you know, the Bears don't have offense. He goes, they got good defense. They don't have any offense. You're not going anywhere. With a good to great offense, you can go places. That's just the way the game is. And you saw that on display last night. The Bears couldn't muster anything with Nick Foles. And, they, you know, it got a little bit saucy after the game because Nick Foles, apparently during a pregame meeting or prior to the game, what happens is your analyst will come in and your play-by-play guy will come in and you sit down with a coach, quarterback, maybe, you know, a defensive player and Khalil Mack, and you just talk. And you're trying to get background information. You know, sometimes they'll get specific and say, hey, you know, we might use this. We might use that player. We might use that package. We might try to surprise them with doing something like this. I don't know what happened when Brian Griese, he's one of the analysts on, you know, Monday Night Football. He sits down with Nick Foles and Nick Foles talks about how, hey, kind of having a hard time getting the play called in and then getting, you know, getting everybody ready to call it. And, you know, so Greasy drops this bomb like 4 minutes to go in the game. And I don't know if he knew what he had. I don't know why he waited until 4 minutes to go in the game instead of sort of giving that as one of the storylines to follow. But here's Brian Greasy during last night's game talking about his conversation with Nick Foles.
We were talking to Nick Foles yesterday, and he said, you know, sometimes play calls come in, and I know that I don't have time to execute that play call. And, you know, I'm the one out here getting hit. And sometimes the guy calling the plays, Matt Nagy, he doesn't know how much time there is back here. And so that's something that they have to get worked out.
Okay. That's late in the game that he's bringing this up. That's where you start the game and you have keys to the game. And that's where Steve Levy says to Brian Griese, what should we be looking for on the Bears' offensive side of the ball? Hey, Nick Foles told me this a couple of days ago or prior to the game that he and Matt Nagy aren't on the same page, which I find absolutely incredible because Matt Nagy and Nick Foles have been at like four other stops in the NFL together. They're attached at the hip. They know each other quite well. And here they are reunited in Chicago, and somehow they can't get the play in. Well, this is being said during the game. Matt Nagy and Nick Foles have no idea that this is being said during the game. They go into the press conference, and somebody asked Nick Foles about it. This is what he had to say.
That was definitely a miscommunication with Brian and I. You know, we do these pregame conversations the day before the game just to give them information. That conversation, Coach Nagy and I have a great conversation on the sidelines. So there might be times where we go through it beforehand and say, hey, what do you think? And there's times where you got to get the ball out quick and whatnot. But in those situations, like Matt and I have a great relationship on the sideline with conversations and everything. I think, you know, in that situation with Brian, it was just a miscommunication of words because that's not what I was trying to bring across in that conversation.
I don't know what the conversation was. A lot of times what happens is you'll have conversations. There is an inference that this is off the record. You have two quarterbacks, Griese, a former quarterback, and Nick Foles. Foles might be just talking to him from one quarterback to another. But that meaning is on the record. And if you're going to share something like that, that's why I don't know why Brian Griese waited till, you know, the fourth quarter to bring this up. This should have been a storyline that we would be able to keep an eye on because I didn't think Foles had time. I thought Aaron Donald was very disruptive. You know, the defense was really good. He couldn't step into his throws. He had a couple of situations where he could have had touchdown passes. But, you know, I'm going to give the Rams a little bit of credit with putting the pressure on him. Then you had Matt Nagy. He's the Bears head coach. That he had this comment on Brian Griese's comment.
I don't know. You'll have to, whenever you talk to Nick, just kind of see where he's at with that. Nick and I have a pretty good relationship, and he hasn't said, I mean, he'll probably explain what he meant by that.
Okay. I don't know how big a deal this is.
Pretty good.
But they have a pretty good relationship. That was the only part of that that, you know, when I heard that comment, it's like, uh-oh. They probably had a really good relationship prior to Nick Foles telling Brian Griese about that. Now they just have a good relationship, kind of good. Yeah, Paul.
If your neighbor and his wife are arguing out front, you say, how are things going over there? Yeah, we got a pretty good relationship. What are you thinking when you go back to the house?
Yeah, McLovin.
But everyone knows the deal. You bring in Nick Foles, you're getting fire quotes left and right all the time. Deal with that guy.
Yeah. He didn't say, you know, he took it out of context. He said there was a miscommunication there, which is an interesting way to describe, hey, I just told you something that I thought was probably off the record. And you dropped a bombshell on me. Yes, Paul.
Any chance this was option three and Nick Foles was saying, like, hey, when Coach Nagy and I talk about plays, I say there's certain plays I can't do because the offensive line's not going to give me time. And he was maybe calling out his offensive line and the lack of time in the pocket, not necessarily the coach himself, because that's how it's playing to some people.
Yeah. I saw this headline, Chicago Bears time to fire Matt Nagy after week six loss to the Rams. Is it time the Bears admit to the real problem and fire head coach Matt Nagy? Dan Orlovsky of the Mothership, former NFL quarterback, he tweeted after rewatching the Monday night game between the Rams and Bears, the biggest takeaway, the coaching gap between Sean McVay and Matt Nagy is enormous. Like enormous, whatever you think it is, times it by 10. Woo! All righty. You know, after the game was really interesting. The game itself wasn't interesting at all. Yes, Todd?
Who goes to who first once it becomes public knowledge, this Griese miscommunication thing? Is it for the coach to go to Nick, or does Nick need to go to the coach to straighten this out?
Is it who or whom?
Whom.
Oh, whom.
Who goes to whom?
I'm going to say Nick Foles probably goes to coach.
But if there's not a problem, do you go to coach?
I go to coach to make sure there's not a problem.
It's like everybody's talking about it, so there's a problem.
Yeah.
So you got to be like, "That coach, that's not what I said."
You don't want this to expand. You want it to contract. And if you go to Matt Nagy and you say, "Hey, coach, this is what happened." Because if I'm Matt Nagy, my first question is, Nick, what did you tell Brian Griese? And was it on the record? And then he can tell you whatever he said. Because right now it's a miscommunication. And we did call for, you know, the parties involved in this, including Brian Griese. But if I'm the coach, I just say, hey, come on in. Let's talk about this. How did it get to this point? Yeah, McLovin.
I was going to pitch a poll question. Would you bet a week's pay if the Bears make the playoffs or not? They're 5-2.
Oh, let me see their record here. I thought that they were a playoff team. You know, I said, you know, I didn't buy into the record, but, you know, you beat who's in front of you. You know, when we start to look at some of these teams, I don't know how good some of these teams are because of the injuries, because of the divisions that you're in, what happens first half of the season with your schedule, second half of the season. So you got, they got New Orleans, Tennessee, and Minnesota coming up. The next three games, Green Bay, Detroit, Houston, Minnesota, Jacksonville, Green Bay.
That's not tough. I mean, New Orleans, by the way, this week, I mean, the Bears, it's the first time New Orleans has been outside all time. New Orleans has one play, throw it to Kamara and hope he wiggles through. I feel like that's a win.
Well, they host the Saints, they host the Vikings. Then they're at Tennessee, at Green Bay. Detroit and Houston are winnable. They're at Jacksonville, and they end up with Green Bay. What's it going to take? Nine wins? Can they get nine wins? Feels like that. They can't generate any offense. I mean, that
usually precludes you from entering the playoffs.
Well, no, the Bears, you know, they were a defensive-minded team when they went to the Super Bowl. They didn't have a great quarterback. They had an opportunistic defense back then. They always have like a great safety or defensive back, like Mike Brown or Peanut Tillman. Like those are your star players. Lance Briggs. You know you're in trouble if, hey, we got some stars, man. Who do you got? Mike Brown, Peanut Tillman.
Eddie Jackson scored last night again. That guy, he's the new Mike Brown.
By the way, Akeem Hicks was like basically the best member of the Rams offense last night.
Oh, man.
The amount of penalties he gets.
Stupid penalties. Yes, McLovin.
I think the problem is David Montgomery, that guy, the Bears running back, it's 2 or 3 yards on every single. They're the worst run team. Yeah. That's why like the inside Bears analysts say, like, if they're not going to run the ball, they can't do anything.
I like how we're talking about the Bears today. If the Bears weren't on Monday Night Football and this was a Sunday afternoon game, we wouldn't be talking about it. Although it is a little juicy about, you know, Nick Foles and his coach and Matt Nagy. Imagine being 5-2 and people want you fired. Meanwhile, you got a 2-5 team in Dallas and we're like, hey, you know what? Here's Stephen Jones, the executive vice president. He's not just the vice president of the Cowboys. He's the executive vice president, and he's Jerry's son. Stephen Jones talking about the head coach, Mike McCarthy.
I think we're going in the right direction. I think Coach McCarthy and his staff, it's just going to take time for them to implement what they do and the way they play. We put a lot of work into Coach McCarthy and what his, you know, what his track record was.
All righty. I'm inspired. Yes, Paul.
He sounded like if Chris Collinsworth and Jerry Jones got together, the voice. It sounded like a combo of those two.
Let's play it again.
I think we're going in the right direction. I think Coach McCarthy and his staff, it's just going to take time for them to implement what they do and the way they play.
I can buy that.
A lot of work.
Stephen Jones laced with a little Chris Collinsworth in there. Yeah. Yeah, McLovin.
I have a Matt Nagy question. Do you think you would recognize him if he came in without a Bears visor?
No.
I can't picture his face in my head at all.
No.
There's nothing about him.
He just got a visor.
It's surgically attached.
Yeah. He's just a visor. By the way, it's not surgically attached. It was Hall of Fame coach Bill Parcells that said, you are what your record says you are. And I don't think that slogan applies to the Chicago Bears. They're 5-1 going into last night. And I don't know if anybody bought into them as an elite team there. And last night, that assumption was confirmed. They were on full display, all the flaws there. And, you know, Nick Foles is a great reliever. He's one of those guys that, man, hey, we need a little boost. It's a big spot, but he just doesn't feel like he's a starter. And that's a problem because Mitchell Trubisky doesn't feel like a starter or a reliever either. And I'm wondering if they go back to Mitchell Trubisky. Have they already seen everything they need to see out of Mitchell Trubisky, and you just want to get through this season, and then you're going to clear the decks? And then maybe Nick Foles is your backup. Maybe you trade for a quarterback. Khalil Mack is still unblockable, and they've snuck into the playoffs with defense before, and maybe that's the case this year. Nobody bought into them at 5-1, and nobody is buying into them at 5-2. Maybe we should talk about the Rams. It's a little cheerier there. Aaron Donald, just to remind us that aside from, I guess, Patrick Mahomes, like the best position player in football is Aaron Donald. And the fact that he has, what, seven and a half sacks going into that game, he gets double teamed every play, basically, because you have to. And the disruption of going up the middle, it's rare when you have somebody in that position who has that many sacks, because you have your speed guys, your edge guys. The disruption that he creates is different than, you know, 99% of your pass rushers. Because I can, you know, I can shade one side of the field. I can always keep my eye on one side of the field. Aaron Donald is coming right at you. And these quarterbacks who try to set up in the pocket, now I get them outside of their comfort zone. And that's just basically to do with Aaron Donald. It was fun to watch him. Not fun to play against him, I'm sure, but it was fun to watch him last night. The Bears are last in the NFL in rushing yards per game, last in rushing touchdowns, and they're 30th in yards rushing per carry. Those are ominous stats there. And the Bears defense and run the football, and it's defense-ish, but they can't run the football. Yeah, Paul.
Is there anything else to talk about? Is there like Dak Prescott's contract? I'm a Bears fan. I don't like when they're on national TV. When they're on a Sunday 1 o'clock game, I'm not kidding. Like when you sit down as a Chicago Bears fan or a team, any team that's not really that good historically or the past couple generations, you sit down and there's no other options. You kind of have to watch the whole game through, so it's painful. And you have to stay in case they come back. You can't bail. So, but if the Bears are playing 1 o'clock on a Sunday, I could peek, I could look, and then if it goes ugly, I'm like, I got to watch something else. It's not pleasant. And I think a lot of people will understand, sometimes watching your team play on national TV is not pleasant.
It's not you're watching your team, it's other people are watching your team.
Yes, it's like the airing of the laundry.
And then everybody goes, what's wrong with your team? God, your team sucks.
You walked in today, and all I heard over my shoulder, it's dead quiet in the studio because it's just me and Fritzy here. All of a sudden I hear, you're Bears.
It's true.
That's it. Not how you doing. Good morning.
Molly's got his back to me at the computer, and I just walk by. You're Bears.
That's it.
Yes, McLovin.
But when they beat the Bucks, there wasn't a single mention of the Bears. It was all Tom Brady holding up four fingers. They weren't even like a sub-story of that. I don't think we mentioned the Bears once after that game, did we?
No, because it's always about Tom Brady.
I don't even know how they won that game, by the way. I don't remember an offensive touchdown in that game.
Can you check and see, did the Bears beat the Buccaneers? Feels like they did. Maybe the Bears should follow like Major League Baseball's philosophy with your pitching staff. Like you start Trubisky as your opener, and then you bring in like three or four quarterbacks. You know, maybe that would be the way
to
go.
Or play to play. Just run them in back and forth and get rid of the headset stuff.
No, the Cowboys did that. Tom Landry did that. He did that with Roger Staubach and Craig Morton. Like sometimes it used to be they would have their guard would be the messenger. Guard would be on the sidelines, get the play from the coach, and then he would go in. And then he would tell the quarterback the play. There was one season where Roger Staubach and Craig Morton were interactive quarterbacks, which is crazy. But Tom Landry would have Morton go in, and then Roger Staubach would come out. I don't know how long they did it. I just remember going, this is crazy. And I was probably 10 at the time and understood it. Yeah, Paul.
I love when that happens. I think when Ron Jaworski was in his last years in Philly and Randall Cunningham just came in the league, they would swap him in for a couple plays at a time, and Randall would run more than throw. But can you imagine the defense looking at Ron Jaworski, who's basically immobile? I mean, he's a statue.
Yeah.
And then you bring in Randall Cunningham for the next play and how you had to change your defense.
Yes, McClellan.
I was there. It was third and long. It was the best. We had season tickets to the Eagles for that era, and Randall would come in third and 21 and make it like
somehow make something happen. All right, we'll come up with a poll question. As I mentioned, Justin Herbert from the Chargers next hour and Buda Baker, Arizona Cardinals safety. How long into the interview with Buda Baker do I bring up DK Metcalf chasing him down from behind? Do we just tear the Band-Aid off and go, hey, have you seen the game film yet? And what happened when Coach, you know, had the Buda Baker DK Metcalf play? How many times did he play it and rewind it? Yes, Todd?
I think you get it out of the way early. And from his tweets and some of the comments he's made, it seems like he's resigned to the fact that that's forever going to follow him. And, you know, they ended up winning the game, so he can deal with that.
Yeah, it was a great play by DK Metcalf. He understood it was a great play, but they did win. And it was a great play by Buda Baker on MVP front runner Russell Wilson Jr. III. All right, we'll come up with a poll question. Phone calls are welcome. Emails, tweets. Operators are standing by. We'll take a break. It's 22 after the hour. This is the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Oh, my God.
The play of the day.
Runner left side, got it!
Check this out.
Hecker in the air.
Wow, what a kick.
That's Ted Ginn back there. And Hecker's done it again.
Oh, man. How he booms this football. Listen, this Rams special teams unit from last season was awful. And Hecker has made four impactful plays in this game. None bigger than that one right there.
That's courtesy of Monday Night Football on ESPN. Play of the day brought to you by Breeders' Cup, November 6th and 7th. The world's best thoroughbreds compete in 14 exhilarating races at the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Learn more at breederscup.com/2020. Catch all the action live on NBC Sports. Johnny Hecker, five punts, pinning the Bears inside their 10-yard line on every one of them. Since 2014, Hecker has 214 punts inside the 20, most in the NFL. Sean McVay gave him the game ball after the game. He punted that as well. I was just kidding. That's not true. I got cheap laughter there from the Dennis. Do we have a poll question that is Johnny Hecker?
Yes.
We do.
Okay. Would you rather be the best punter in the game, Johnny Hecker, or the worst starting quarterback in the game?
Worst starting quarterback in the game?
Yes. So you're one of 32 starters in the NFL. I know that's a little tricky with injuries, but say you're like week one starter.
Well, I'm guaranteed to be a starting punter for a long time if I'm the best punter in the game.
Right.
I'm not guaranteed to stay the starting quarterback if I'm the worst quarterback in the league.
You probably won't.
No. Johnny Hecker's career salary.
It's solid.
$19.6 million. He's 30 years of age. I don't know if he's going to the Hall of Fame, but I think he's making a real strong case to go to the Hall of Fame. And you got Ray Guy as the only punter in there. I don't know if they've ever considered another punter, but I would think that Johnny Hecker has a chance to be a Hall of Famer here. Yeah, Paul.
Hecker's 30 years old, so he's got about at least five more years of making money. So let's say he makes $35 million in his career. It's probably what he's going to make. If you could have Johnny Hecker's career of $35 million or Chase Daniels' career at $35 million, which is about what Chase is going to make, never really playing in an NFL game for any long period of time.
I would want to be Johnny Hecker because I affect the game. I'm in the game. I'm the best at what I do in the game. I'm an all-pro. And maybe a chance to go to the Hall of Fame. Yeah, McLevin.
what if you get like the whole package, like your college career? Because even the worst, you know, like Chase Daniel was a superstar in college, covered Sports Illustrated. You get a lot of glory coming up.
I'm not going to let you do that one.
No lifetime career, like no lifetime achievement.
No, no. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app. We make way for the quarterback of the Chargers. He's Justin Herbert back on the program. How's life?
First off, thanks for having me. And, you know, it's gone by pretty fast, but it's been a lot of fun so far.
Now, last time I talked to you, I was talking about the possibility of you ending up with the Chargers. You remember that conversation? You kind of shook me off. I was wide open, and you went through your progressions, and you went to another receiver there. You got to listen to me.
I know. In hindsight, I glad things worked out, though.
Yeah, yeah. How much time did you have to prepare for that first start? Like actual minutes when you heard that Tyrod Taylor had been injured by the team doctor, and then you're getting ready to face the Chiefs.
Less than a minute. I was walking down the sideline ready to cheer on the offense because I knew we were getting the ball to start the game. And I was saying, let's go offense, let's go offense. Coach Lynn walks up to me and says, Justin, you're in. Focus up now. And I was looking around and just – I really couldn't believe it. And then out of nowhere, Coach Hamilton and Coach Steich and the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach, they're there too. And I'm thinking, oh, this is really real. I'm really about to go in. And
but I wondered if it was better, though, Justin. If I said you had 24 hours to prepare as opposed to 1 minute.
Yeah, there were both positives and negatives about it. Not having to worry and not having to think about it was great. Just going out there and playing football was awesome. But I would have loved to have gotten some more team reps that week of practice. And so I didn't really get to a whole lot of rep the plays that we were going with. And so having had those during the week, I think that would have been a little bit better.
Did you talk to Mahomes after the game?
Mm-hmm. Got to talk to him and, you know, he shared some thoughts and it was really cool to meet him.
Because if you're the backup, you don't get to meet Mahomes, but as the starter, it feels like the door is open that you're allowed to walk over to Mahomes or Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or Drew Brees, right?
Yeah. I mean, the first game I got to go say hi to Joe, but that was only because I knew him a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been an interesting transition here because I didn't know when you thought you were going to play. Did you have any idea of when you thought or how much you were going to play, like back in August?
No, we had no idea. Coach Hamilton and I, we talked about being ready for when that time comes, but we had no idea. And so we just had to prepare like I was the starter. And quickly enough, second week was pretty quick.
When you come into the game, do the linemen, like, do they go, what are you doing? Like, because they're expecting Tyrod come in. Did the line know that you were going to be starting?
No, I don't think anyone knew. When I stepped into the huddle, that's the first time people knew that I was going to play.
That's crazy. What's been the biggest challenge? Because you're making it look a lot easier than it really is.
It's all been pretty tough. It's not easy by any means. And the amount of meetings and lifting and things we do outside of practice is a bunch. And the games are so fast. The pass rushers on that side of the ball are different than they were in college. And I think that's definitely something that I've had to get used to pretty much.
What about terminology? That getting the play in, processing it, calling the play, and then going to the line of scrimmage?
Yeah, it's a little different too. At Oregon, we were a no huddle team. And so we'd get the signal and I'd reiterate the signal, but I wouldn't really call a play in the huddle. And so that's kind of different with our offense where, you know, I'm looking at a wristband, I get a play through the headset, call it in the huddle and break. But it's just something I've had to practice.
But just getting to the line of scrimmage and everything that goes on, you know, you see Brady and Rodgers and Breeze, and these guys have been doing it a long time. What is it that they're doing that's different than, or what you're aspiring to do? Like when you get to the line of scrimmage and you see that defense, you know, being able to go, okay, I know what this is, or they're in cover two, they're in man, they're going to blitz. Are you there yet?
I'm probably not there yet, but I've for sure gotten better over the past couple of weeks, and I think there's always room for improvement. But I think what they do best is I think each specific play, they realize this is what the defense is doing. We're in a good play or we're not in a good play. Let's get to a better play. And so they're able to check and do all these things that, you know, I'd love to be able to do in the future. And I'm going to keep learning and get better and hopefully one day be there.
Are you taught how to slide? I know you're a former baseball player, but I see quarterbacks who don't know how to slide.
We haven't had sliding practice yet. But with a baseball background, I better be able to slide.
Did you have a favorite baseball team growing up?
It was actually the Seattle Mariners.
Oh, sorry about that. I thought you'd be a Yankee. I saw a picture. Didn't you get a picture with Derek Jeter?
Yeah, that was just because I was a big Jeter fan.
Oh, okay. But you were a pitcher, not a shortstop?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I actually played shortstop until I hit a growth spurt and they had to move me to first base pitcher.
What better uniforms, Chargers or the Ducks?
Ooh, that's tough. I don't know if I could pick one.
But that's part of the game here. Like,
I would say they're both different in their ways. I really enjoyed wearing the Oregon uniforms.
Which one do you look faster in?
Oh, I don't think I look faster than any of them.
have you ever had a Daniel Jones moment on the field?
I can't remember. I would say maybe in like elementary school or middle school. I never had that long of runs in games in high school or college, so I haven't been able to do that.
Well, you had a couple long runs in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, nothing quite like 80, 90 yards, though.
I felt bad for him, but, you know, it was like he was running. He was trying to run even faster than he possibly could.
He's really fast. I didn't really realize that. He broke, I think, 21 miles an hour,
yeah,
which is incredible.
Have you been – what's your top-end speed? Have you been registered?
Not that fast.
No?
I think we in college, we got marked at like 20-something, but never quite broke 21.
He's Justin Herbert, the Chargers quarterback, joining us here on the Dan Patrick Show. Can you tell me about this thing? I didn't know what this was, a regional softball toss when you were 11 years of age at a track meet. Did you what is a softball toss at a track meet?
Yeah, so when you're really little, we had these all-comers meets, and you'd be able to go out there and just do a bunch of events. And I don't think they had the shot put or the javelin yet, so it was the softball throw. And
did you get a trophy?
Yeah, well, I actually got to go to Hershey, Pennsylvania for the national one. So I flew across the country, threw the softball 3 times. Had a lot of fun.
And that was it?
That was it.
How many trophies do your parents have that are yours?
I think we've got a pretty good amount. I was fortunate enough to be on some pretty good teams when I was growing up. We had a lot of guys, so we were pretty lucky.
But did they put them away? Did you take any with you to L.A.?
No, I think they're all still in the garage. I didn't take any with me, but...
Do you have anything in your apartment?
Trophy-wise?
Yeah.
I've got the football that I ran in against Kansas City, the first touchdown.
Oh, that's cool. That's good. And you got any jerseys up? I mean, are you in your apartment right now?
No, I'm actually in a hotel because we had to evacuate our house because of the fires.
Oh, no. Oh, well, sorry about that.
It's okay.
You got Denver coming up. Have you played in snow in a while?
Only in my front yard. never in a real game, so that's...
Well, good luck against Denver in Denver, and congrats so far on what's been a pretty incredible run for you there with the Chargers. Thanks for joining us again, Justin.
Thank you for having me.
All right. That's Justin Herbert. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. By the way, the Cleveland Browns learning yesterday that Odell Beckham Jr. tore his ACL, misses the rest of the season. And it's the latest major injury in the NFL season that's been loaded with them. After he got hurt, Baker Mayfield led the Browns to a win over Cincinnati. Critics said that they're better off without Beckham demanding the ball. And it's no surprise. A lot of people love him, but and he's a dynamic player. But, you know, he's the ultimate me-first receiver. And it's the age-old dilemma at that position. The best ones want the ball, expect the ball. They're not happy when they don't get the ball. They want to, in traffic and double cover, they want the ball. From Jerry Rice to Larry Fitzgerald to you name it. You want the ball. But, you know, they're still in that AFC North, and you're going to need every weapon you have. And not having Beckham will hurt this team. I wonder if it makes Baker Mayfield more effective. And that's kind of a tricky way of saying, is he going to be better because he doesn't have to feed Odell Beckham? Although you want to. I don't want the defense to know that I have to feed him or when I'm going to give him the ball. I think the element of surprise with Beckham is when he's always at his most dangerous. And he is an elite receiver. He's not the receiver I want on my team, but I understand that weapon. At that position, you know, if it's Antonio Brown, he's a weapon. I wouldn't want him on my team. I understand why Tampa did bring him in. Losing Odell Beckham Jr., it makes you different. I don't know if it makes you better. But this may help Baker Mayfield be a better quarterback. Yeah, McLovin.
And good news, Nick Chubb, his report came out. He could be back by week 10. You'd love Nick.
Yes, I do.
So maybe they run more. And
I've been saying it all along. That's what they need to do. Run the football, and then you can sprinkle in a couple of big plays. Nothing better than play action when the defense actually buys into play action. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live on the Peacock app. Cardinals got a bye, and then they host the Dolphins after that. Tua Tagovailoa will have a game under his belt as the Dolphins have the Rams coming up. One of the stars of the Cardinals defense, the safety Buda Baker, is joining us on the program. Buda, thanks for joining us. Since this is your first time on the show, you get to decide when I ask you about the DK Metcalf play.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, first off, thanks for having me, Dan. Second off, you can ask me right now.
All right. Here we go. Now, have you watched the film as a team?
Not yet.
Okay. How do you think that's going to go? That it was a great play on your part, but DK tracks you down. How many times do you think coach plays it and then rewinds it?
Probably maybe once or twice. You know, it's all good laughs now that we got the W, but if we didn't get that win, that play definitely would have been on my mind.
When did you realize, could you hear DK running after you?
Yeah, so that's what happened first. So, you know, I get the interception. I see Russ. I'm like, all right, cool, beat Russ. I'm gone. I'm running. I look up at the Jumbotron, you know. You know when you're driving a car and you look in that rear-view mirror and it's like objects may be closer than they may appear? It was one of those. I looked up in the Jumbotron. He looked like he was not that close to me. And then I felt his steps turn around and he was right there. Kind of startled me. Then I, you know, try to maybe see if I can stiff arm him real quick. But the way his angle was, it was bad from there. So he tackled me.
Now, I got you running a 4.45 at the combine there, right? Does that sound right?
Yeah, 4.45.
Would you like a rematch against DK Metcalf?
Of course, you know, the competitor in me, of course, wants a rematch. I wish I would have just stayed looking forward like it was a track meet and just, you know, try to edge him out.
And sometimes you run faster when you're being when somebody's being chased. But in this case, I mean, he got there quickly. He got there a whole lot quicker than I thought he was going to get there. And a guy that size shouldn't be running that fast, Buda.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I don't know what his numbers was at the combine. I think it was a 4.3. But, yeah that man, you definitely saw him on the camera digging, you know, digging, trying to catch me, and he caught me. So kudos to DK.
Yeah, but more importantly, you got the win. You guys now 5-2. What do you think the big reason why you guys have been successful? Is there one thing that stands out?
Oh, man. I mean, I really think it's just guys, you know, coming together more and trusting each other within, you know, either the offense, special teams, or defense. And, you know, last game was an ugly game, but we sometimes you got to get those ugly games out the way. So that was definitely a big one for us, you know, coming off a Monday night game, coming off a short week, going against Seattle, who was coming off a bye week. So it was definitely one of those games where it was very positive for us.
If somebody hadn't seen Kyler Murray play, how would you describe him?
Electric, you know. That's what I would describe him as, a guy who can throw, can run, who's quick, can make those quick cuts, get in and out of breaks very fast. And, you know, I love him that he's our quarterback, because I would not want to go against him.
Are you a, have you, you've never hit him before, right?
Oh, of course not.
But if you, would you want to hit him just to, like, it feels like defensive players on a team, like guys with New England could never hit Tom Brady, or the Packers can't hit Aaron Rodgers. Like, at some point, don't you want to just pop him just a little bit?
Not at all. You know, that's a franchise QB guy, you know, you want on the field at all times. So even in practice, if I get a blitz or if I'm even close to him, I'm stopping at least 5 to 6 yards before I even get close to him.
Very smart. Very smart. He's Buda Baker. And now, Bishard is your real first name, correct?
Correct.
Who calls you Bishard?
Actually, now nobody really. Nobody really knows. My family, of course, they don't even call me Bishard. So a lot of people don't even really know my real name.
Wait, your mom, when she gets mad at you, didn't yell out, Bishard?
Oh, yeah, for sure. When I was younger, for sure. Now, you know, there's not much she can get mad at me about, you know.
Well,
grown man, I'm out the house, so now it's just, you know, calling me. She just calls me Buddha.
Yeah, but it helps you bought her a Mercedes, Bishard.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that what did you get?
Oh, man, I didn't really get anything.
Oh, I saw where, isn't DeAndre Hopkins, doesn't he drive like a Ferrari?
I believe so. I think, yeah, he's my parking mate. We park next to each other. So, yeah, I see his Ferrari out. I took him out for a drive. I asked him, like, hey, let me drive it, because, you know, I've never drove a Ferrari before. So D-Hop's a great guy. He's like, yeah, man, do whatever you want. So,
who's got the worst?
Taking a Ferrari out was definitely fun.
Who's got the worst car in the parking lot?
The worst car?
Yeah.
Maybe Justin Pugh.
He's an offensive lineman. So what's he driving, a minivan?
No, he drives a Lincoln, four-door SUV. He said he downgraded. You know, he was my parking mate last year. He had a Range Rover. It was a nice Range Rover for an old lineman. So, he downgraded to that Lincoln.
Well, what's the parking mate? What's that mean?
So that means, you know, we have our parking spots in the gate. So he was next to me.
Oh, okay. All right. Now you're...
I see him, you know.
Now it's D-Hop with his Ferrari.
Yeah,
nice.
Exactly.
Nice. Well, good luck in film session. You know, hopefully... Were your teammates, did they make fun of you at all after the game?
They were made fun of me. You can kind of say that. They were just like, yeah, you got hogged. But, you know, after looking at the miles per hour, they were like, look, you were moving. That guy's just, you know, he's a mutant, so.
DK Metcalf looks like a defensive lineman, though, Buddha.
Oh, man, yeah, he does. He definitely does, and up close he does for sure. I mean, standing up and realizing he tackled me, just like, dang, this big guy hocked me down. It's crazy.
Does Kingsbury ever get in on the action, work out with you guys?
Oh, no, not at all.
Oh, I thought that he liked to mix it up a little bit and show everybody he has a good arm. And
oh, I mean, maybe with the offense, but, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, you know, I don't. He doesn't really do much.
He doesn't talk about his college career?
Nah, he doesn't talk about his college career at all. I mean, Cliff is one of those guys that just, you know, talk about what you need to do for today, and that's really it. He's a man of, you know, less words, and we like it that way.
Well, congrats so far. Congrats on your contract, and widely recognized as the best safety in the game. Buddha, thanks for joining us. We appreciate your time. Next time, hopefully we have you on, and it'll be for a different reason, an even bigger win.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. Thanks again for having me.
That's Buddha Baker.